Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
On today's podcast, author Garth Jones joins me to discuss our favourite TV books / graphic novels for 2022. My name is Justin Hamilton, and I believe a thick hardcover is not just great to read, but also a perfect workout here on Big Squid. Thank you for taking the time to join me for this podcast. It is the last of our favourites from 2022. So if you've missed it, we've already covered movies with Alexi Toliopoulos, TV with Adam Richard, music with Imogen Clarke, and today, taking a break from his usual Pass the Amyl segment, it's the author of Homebrewed Vampire Bullets, Garth Jones, sharing his favourite books from 2022. Then at the end, we'll have a chat about the books you suggested, and it's a pretty eclectic collection of novels that's about to be discussed, so strap yourself in. It's great. It's so broad, and everyone brings a different flavour to this episode. It is Thursday when this podcast is being dropped, and that means if you live in Adelaide, you only have three more chances to check out my new live show, Little Victories, at the Rhino Room. That's right, it is only three more shows, so that will be the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of March. Oh my God, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of March. Like, to be honest, it's such a cliche to say, wow, how did we get here? But, you know, sometimes cliches are true because it's like, how did we get here? It's been a big year so far. So, you know what? Maybe you want to come along and have a laugh. It's an hour of ha-ha. That's it. Just jokes, like stacks of jokes, like heaps of jokes. I will put my show up against anyone else's for the amount of jokes I have in there. And my Big Squid listeners can access a discount code. All you have to do is head to justinhamilton.com.au/gigs, click on the link and use the promo code podcast, and you can save money on your ticket purchases. That is justinhamilton.com.au/gigs, and the promo code is podcast. Okay, time to bring in Garth so we can get our nerd on and talk books. As listeners of the podcast will be aware, I have been going through favorite movies, favorite TV shows, favorite albums of 2022. Not the best, just the favorites. And when I decided we were going to do the favorite books of 2022, I thought, well, why not talk to an actual author who knows what they're talking about? And so we have the Pass the Amyl co-host Garth Jones, the author of Homebrewed Vampire Bullets, Volume 1, and more importantly, Volume 2.
As of last Monday, yes. Or whenever we're hearing this.
Yeah. It's exciting. It's it's. I feel like that's an author's dream to suddenly have, you know, a continuing story that you can come back to.
I've got a little shelf now that's actually got spines, the spinal mock-up.
Yeah.
I've got a library of me. So yeah. That's not arrogant at all.
No, no, it's great. That's all right.
It's all the markups anyway. It's all the red pen ones.
Yeah.
So you can remember that. The process, yeah.
Oh man, the process, the ongoing writing process, the draft after draft, and I just got some notes back on something that I'm working on at the moment, and they were really helpful, and I was really grateful to them. And there was just one thing that the person picked out, and I was like, "God damn it! I thought I covered all of that." Nope, that was all in my head.
No matter how many drafts, you're always going to find something.
That's so true.
Yep.
So for people who may not have read Volume 1 of Homebrew Vampire Bullets, how would you like to best sum it up for our new listeners?
Volume 1 introduces you to a bunch of burnouts, no-hopers in the sort of Adelaide, I guess the leftovers of this pub rock scene of the 1990s in this case. Played with the timelines a lot as I was developing the project. It was the 70s. We moved into the 90s, so a few things can happen further on in the narrative.
Yep.
That will make a bit more sense. And they've accidentally received a call to headline a festival in Sydney called The Harvest. And for some narrative reasons yet unknown, they're going to do a road trip.
Yeah.
And they just set out and started sort of doing their Fellowship with the Ring, gathering the crew.
Yeah.
We're all completely toasted and off their faces 90% of the time.
Yes. And this is 100% genre. This is the Ozploitation flavour. Is that would be the best umbrella?
This leads with a bunyip fight.
Yeah.
You'll not see a bunyip after this, and most of the references to things that are sort of supernatural are pretty offhanded. It's more of a Gonzo road narrative, which is more social commentary and political satire and black comedy as it goes on, but it sort of hooks you in with this ridiculous bunyip origin story.
Yeah.
And then takes you on a trip through a huge range of my cultural peccadilloes.
Such as?
Hanging shit on, art gallery, the culture of art in Australia.
Yeah.
It's definitely a low culture sort of exploration of all those hang ups around what Australian media and popular culture doesn't really get into anymore, which is exploitation in a nutshell, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, there's a healthy taste of hair metal in there as well. Some of the greatest names of bands. That must have been the most fun, coming up with band names, character names.
It was also just having to copy and paste the umlaut every time out of my Google Docs because I still can't remember what the actual function key is. So I hobbled myself there with a whole bunch of umlauts. A whole lot of fucked up spellings. I had to then go back and continually check that I hadn't messed up. Very cleverly at one stage suggested an accent on Ed Von Satan's last name, which then became the bane of my copy checking life.
One of the notes that I'd written for myself was, does your work drafts ever get close to exploding with all the red lines that must be under 70% of the words and the sentence structures? Because it's got such the story's got such a rhythm to it, and it's a definitive rhythm. Like, once you clock it, it's really easy to read, and you get right into that world. But I'm guessing a document is like, what is happening here?
I use a program called Scrivener, and we won't get too nerdy on that, but it's not Word, and it ignores everything and takes it for granted that you're writing in your dialect. It saves you the humiliation of just the blocks of red lines. And that's something I've been really interested in as this project's come out, is meeting usually online, but, other authors who are writing in a patois or, using that sort of narrative style that rejects literary convention.
Yeah.
And sort of leans into the language of wherever you're from.
Yeah. I'm it's something that I've noticed with some of my writing as well, is that sometimes you are trying to write from one person's perspective, and you're trying to write in ways that might not necessarily be grammatically perfect, but that's how they'd talk. And the constant suggestions of take this word out and do this, and it's almost like these documents want to homogenize the language to such an extent that everyone from 17th century to 31st century will talk in the same kind of rhythm.
And two of the books I've chosen for later on are both really lean into that too. And an interview with one of the authors, a Scottish guy called D.D. Williams, who's sort of a, I guess you'd think of him as like a, in the lineage of Irvine Welsh, but he writes deeply in the Scottish, you know, dialect, and doesn't revert to standard English between people, characters, dialogue.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that just sort of like, once you're in the rhythm and can feel the voice of the thing, I'll take all the red lines.
It's
encouraging.
It tells you you're going in the right direction. The way the book's put together is visually exciting to read, because there are, there's a different definite style and flavour to things, you know.
There's a typographic approach, you know, leaning into sort of band logos. The occasional bit of like, it's incidental artwork, whether it's like band posters, things like that. Narrative up. Very much felt like I was given the license to do that by your recommendation of Ryan Hughes's XX.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a, you know, atmospherically good graphic designer, and that wasn't my intention to compete with that sort of stuff. But, yeah, definitely that sort of let me off the leash a bit more when it came to actually presenting it as I envisioned it would need to be presented.
Yeah.
Versus very quickly get the impression that publishers will not let you do that.
No,
Sort of, self-directing it,
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? It's like you always need these artists to give you permission to do things. And what you're doing is different to Ryan, but I can see where reading XX would be like, oh, hang on a sec.
I mean, absolutely in the same wheelhouse. You know, I had QR codes as a cop, you know, before I'd read it, but it absolutely sort of, let me hit the accelerator basically on just embracing all that stuff. He'd done it in such a subtle way, and I'm certainly not doing it in a subtle way.
That's great though.
Hitting you over the head for sure. But that's why it was a manuscript that was, it's about 400 pages long, and really decided to sort of like just give the reader a little break by like breaking it up into the novellas. It can be a lot to delve into. So, they're all about 120 page chunks, 130 page chunks that sort of give people a chance to sort of marinate and then recover.
Yeah.
Pretty much like the guys in the book.
Recovering. The QR codes are great as well, because it means that it comes with its own music. And how did you get the music created and designed for the books?
The original concept was, I won't name names, but I had a, I think we discussed this a little bit, but a very old friend who may or may not be, an inspiration for one of the characters. Was always going to work on it. And just during the first year of the pandemic, it became clear that he wasn't going to be able to do that for a range of reasons. Nothing that devastating, but just creatively, it wasn't on the horizon. So I realised my friend John Short, who had been playing around with sequencing, remixing things.
Yep.
He's got a massive sort of PAL 9000 style set up in his house now. It's basically the house. He's just all his synth gear.
Yep.
And I just sent him through a little like 90-word briefs, and he just turned around and come back with this stuff that's just jaw-dropping.
Yeah, it's great.
You can hand him Nintendo circa 1994 meets Miami Vice meets Chase Headquarters, and he'll come back and it'll be something entirely different, but just entirely on point.
Yeah, that's great. No, I love it.
And it's really been that sort of, that sort of mid-80s sort of Carpenter, Ivor Davies, Razorback soundtrack sort of vibe.
Yes. Volume 2 has come out and it's fantastic, continues the story. And just before we get into the specifics of Volume 2, our lead character, Ed's our lead character, isn't
Ed's
it?
Our lead, yeah.
Yeah.
And I would equate him to being Jeff Lebowski.
Yes.
The shaggy dog. Things happen to him.
Yes.
He sort of rolls his way through. That will become more apparent as it rolls into the third volume, why that's the case.
Right.
And on to 4 and 4 to 6 as I slowly get those together. But yeah, there's definitely a reason that he's the sort of like useless male semi-protagonist, I guess.
There's a touch of, and I mean this as a compliment as well, Big Trouble in Little China, where, do you know what I mean? It's like he is useless, but he is compelling.
Completely self-absorbed, completely off his face, and just things happen and sort of progress for reasons will become apparent.
Yeah, and the band, how do you pronounce it? Because is it Babylon?
Babylon, which is a
Babylon.
It's a reference to, you know, some of the occult beliefs of people like Aleister Crowley. I've got a book somewhere called Sex and Rockets, which is about L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Whiteside Parsons getting mixed. It was made into a TV series a couple of years ago, exploring the connection of the rocket propulsion program in California.
Yeah.
And all the occult business that was wrapped up there. So this is me just sort of taking some of that lore and having fun with it more so. You'll see. Again, I won't spoil anything for the third one. It's just a very strong name. And it was the Whore of Babylon that they were trying to raise, L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Whiteside Parsons, in the wand rituals in the 1940s, which was essentially standing around all having a wank.
Yeah. It feels like what a lot of black magic is. Here's an elaborate ruse for grown men to have a flog.
Yep, just have a flog. Yep.
Early on,
and that will tie in, yes.
And that will tie in, of course. Early on, we meet lots of great characters with lots of great names. But one name I'm really curious about is there's a lot of Grahams.
There are a lot of Grahams.
Where did is there a Graham in your life that was the inspiration?
Was at the time.
Right,
and he would have had the accent that the Grahams have.
Right,
and
right.
He sat across me in a cubicle for about 18 months.
Right.
So we definitely delve into, and also, I mean, the inspiration of those characters is really like every 80s Afrikaner villain, like Lethal Weapon style.
Is this the Paraguay unit?
Yes, the Paraguay unit. Just that sort of like, just, you know, the ponytails. The coldness, the level of sort of sadistic shit that they'll get down to.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an action movie parody and sort of a way to drive things along.
Yeah, great. And the Australian president seems like the real deal. I enjoy any moments with him. What were you picturing when you were...
The first probably half a dozen drafts, that was David Boone.
Yeah, right. Doesn't feel like Boone now, though.
No, so what essentially it was the four initial presidents of the Republic were Hawke, John Laws, Peter Brock, and then Boone.
Yeah.
Boone, the most recent one. But there was like a point where I was like, I don't feel as confident about Australian satire laws.
Right.
As I might if it was being released in the States.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to make sure that, like, that little bit off the front of it, the indicia where it says, similarity to people living or dead, completely coincidental. So I went through and changed all the names, but sort of left a few little traits in.
Yeah.
But just 100% shat myself at the crucial point, thinking, I don't want to get a letter from Boone.
Yeah.
Morsi, you know?
No. That'd be kind of exciting getting a letter from Boone, but maybe the rest of them you don't want to hear from. One of my favourite parts of the book, and I don't know what this says about me, maybe there's a slightly cruel, sadistic part of me deep down, the artist side of me. But there's a lot of bad reviews for the artists.
Yes.
Like, they're super cruel. And what I was curious is, are you either saying that there's a greater message in creating art and that's something to aim for, or are you just enjoying thinking of shit shows you've seen in the past and using that as inspiration to finally tee off?
Nothing so lofty as creating art's its own reward. It's going to a show and being an absolute prick about it afterwards.
Yeah. Well, that's true, isn't it?
Only ever when it was like an act, a huge international act, like a, you know, or something that would inspire like a tear like that. A few of those I've sort of rewritten and sort of moved the content into the world. A few were actual reviews that I went back and looked at and thought, no, that's too good to be left.
Yeah,
in the Google Docs.
Yeah. This has got to live on. Yeah. I don't know if this is coincidence, but the last three movies I saw at the cinema, which were, one was a hot mess, but I really enjoyed it, which was Babylon. Tar, which I thought was actually brilliant, and Triangle of Sadness, that I thought was really good, but maybe had been overhyped a little bit for me. But all three movies, for me, were watchable. And in all three movies, I watched at different points people leaving. And one of the things I noticed was it seemed to be the men leading and the women, especially Babylon, where I was sitting was just above the entrance/exit. And of the seven couples that I watched leave, four of them, the woman stopped on the top step and watched for a little bit longer before she left. And I don't know what to make of it, but I'm curious about it.
Yeah, what's that saying? Yeah. What are these? What was the? As I told you before, I saw Maurice the Magnificent or whatever it was this morning with Hugh Laurie. So my cinema going is being a little bit limited at the moment.
Right, but I kind of figure, like, this is just me. But if you've paid for a ticket, why not just see it through till the end? And unless you sit down and then suddenly you realise you're in a movie that's extolling the virtues of a hate crime or something like that, like, I'd rather see it till the end. But also, on a purely shallow level, why not just enjoy watching Margot Robbie or just wonder what's going to happen at the end of Tar, or just, you know, the madness of Triangle of Sadness? Like, just see where it's going to go.
Just walk-ins or not, you know, it was just what was on?
I just don't know. Like, I don't know if it's a coincidence. Like, maybe it's just three films that I saw. I don't know if people are so used to watching things at home now that they check out really quickly, and so now they don't have the mental fortitude to focus and give something a go. I don't know. It's really interesting.
But, chop the book into three parts.
Mate, it's a smart move.
I don't trust anyone anymore.
Yeah, no. Good, it's a good plan. Without giving away the ending to this one, where can we expect Volume 3 to take us?
We've got, at the moment, there's a brief I've sent to John that is it's a Bernard Herrmann movie from 1971 that's got, I think it's a French film that he did the soundtrack for.
Yeah.
And that is the opening inspiration for the what will become an Agatha Christie-style chamber murder mystery to kick off the next one.
With Ed and Babylon.
It's more of a... I've been reading The Dark Tower and I realised that those digressions, I've just done one of those.
Yeah. Mate.
I'm never having read it, but it's definitely a bit sharper than Old Steve goes.
Mate.
It's not a 600-page one. It's more of a sort of like 5,000 words interspersed. But yeah, we'll kick off with like a chamber murder mystery that's set at the beginning of the timeline. You'll learn a lot more about the politician, tank crusader Excalibur.
Yeah.
Who you can probably guess at the inspiration for him based on what you've seen so far.
Yeah.
Lots of regional politicians who I certainly grew up around and I had to write favourable news stories about more recently. and then we're going to go completely cosmic. There's going to be a giant sort of Lovecraftian shift into the whole thing.
Great.
I'll go loose there, loosely that.
Great. How many volumes do you have planned, or are you just going to see where it goes?
I'm going to take a pause after the third one.
Yep.
And I'm probably, we'll spend the remainder of the year sort of getting it together to flesh out what I've got sitting, in the to-be-written drive.
That's great, isn't it? It's great to have your own set of stories that you can tell in your own universe. What are you thinking it's called? Is it the Homebrewed verse? Is it the Vampire Bullets verse? Is it the Go Fuck Yourself verse? Like, what is it? What umbrella does it come under?
it's probably is the Go Fuck Yourself verse. Read between the lines verse.
That's great.
Please don't forget. You know what I mean.
Yeah. I do know what you mean. Where can people get volume 1 and 2?
They're on my website at casttheamble.com/shop. You'll be able to get the print on demand version, which is getting to people in about 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Or there's the digital one, which you can just use on your reader of choice.
Yeah, great.
There's a couple of limited editions that I've almost run out of volume 1, and I'm just waiting on a shipment of volume 2. And if people jump in and just email me or tweet at me or whatever, and I can put one aside and flip that off when they get here.
Man, that volume 1 cover is a limited edition.
Unfortunately, Simon hasn't been able to come back for this one, but we'll get him back for the third one when I get really mercenary and collect them all again. And full paperback.
In that big volume.
Yeah.
For long-time listeners of the podcast, the Pass the Ammo podcast or episodes that we do on this are coming back very soon. We already have the first one recorded, and it's it's a funny one.
Everyone,
But we're going to go through the top 5 books that we read our favorite 5 books, I should say, and graphic novels of 2022. You are the guest, Garth. I'm going to go from 5 to number 1. And since you're the guest, you can go first. And then after that, I'll read out some of the books that our listeners sent through as suggestions. So what was your number 5?
Okay, well, I have gone in chronological order from the first one I read.
Yep.
The most recent. And this one actually came out in 2021. But it sort of was, a good starting point for what was to follow. It's Kirsty Allison, who's an English author. I'll read you the synopsis. I've just got the synopsis for each of these, and it's a book called Psychomachia.
Yep.
And the blurb goes, literature like this is usually presented through the male gaze, hence the fashion and rock and roll literary naming Kirsty Allison London's Finest. She's hilarious. She's fucked up. Scarlet Flag is so wasted, she doesn't know if she killed the arch patriarch of rock and roll, Malachi Wright, of Wright State's international touring after he raped her at a festival at 14. Scarlet is the kind of girl you want to help, fuck, and leave. But is she dangerous? Did she murder Malachi, or was it her boyfriend, Iggy Paper Shoes, frontman of Hiroshima? So, dark as hell, an extreme, but we were talking about language, and Kirsty's like a creature of the 90s club scene in the UK.
Yep.
And this is it's like it's brutal but really funny slap around the head for 300 pages.
Yep.
Just authenticity through and through. And she's been kind enough to blurb Homebrewed. And she's been supportive of it in that magazine she publishes, Ambit, in the UK.
Oh, yes.
So this isn't one for one. This is literally I just think it's such a bloody good book. And it's only available in hardback. So you can't find there's no digital versions or anything out there. You have to order it from the publishing company's website.
Right.
It's really got many reviews on Amazon, but it's just, it's inky black, authentic as fuck, UK version of, the lifestyle we all had at one stage.
Right, yeah. Where did you discover her?
I think it was on Instagram.
Yeah.
I noticed the post of the cover art going around. It's like a hot pink sort of portrait of a woman by an artist called Sienna Barnes. Really stark, really graphic. Funnily enough, in the Babylon 6-pointed star.
Yeah.
So there's those sort of references in there as well. And, just followed up and finally managed to get a copy in the middle of 2021.
Yep.
Right when postage was as expensive as it will ever be.
Oh, yeah.
Shipping it from the UK.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, had a few back and forths with the publisher and sort of, you know, got to know those guys as well. And I just, that was that's the kickoff for the list anyway.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great suggestion. I'm cheating mildly on one of these books.
It's Wrecking Ball Press, if anyone's interested. You can look them up and you can grab the book from them.
Oh, okay. So Wrecking Ball Press?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, out of the UK.
It's funny, I did quite a bit of reading last year and unfortunately, you know, this is a problem with books and music is like TV and movies. You're watching a lot of current stuff, but books and music, it's all over the place. So it's a mild cheat on the fifth book. So it's probably fifth because it's a mild cheat, but it's American Prometheus, The Triumph and Tragedy of J. Robert Oppenheimer by Kai Bird and Martin J. Sherwin. Tells the true life story of Oppenheimer, his life in the lead up to helping develop the nuclear bomb, the atomic bomb, and what happens to him afterwards. Quite clearly, the Christopher Nolan movie Oppenheimer's coming out, and he mentioned that it had been inspired by this book, and I'd kind of kept an eye out for it, but at the time, I don't know where it is now, but it was out of print. It was hard to find. So I managed to get a hand on it. And when it turned up, it was a brick with tiny print. And I was like, oh, Jesus, this is going to be a bit of a slog. But it was, in fact, the opposite. It's actually a thrilling read. And funnily enough, the way the story is told, I can see where the appeal lies in how you could turn this into a movie. Because at first, it's like, well, Why would you film this in IMAX? Do you know what I mean? Like, why would you film a story about this in such a way that it would be on the big screen? Yeah, but it's a hell of a read, and it's fascinating where he was quite clearly a brilliant man, but slightly naive, because his theory was they were developing the bomb because they were scared that Nazi Germany were going to get them. Yeah, and then but his theory was once Germany wasn't going to get it and they were going to have the technology, that they should share it with Russia and share it with everyone, so that way you would avoid an arms race. And as you can well imagine, the American military were not keen on that as an idea. So it's a stressful read, but it's kind of thrilling and brilliant all at once. So that's my number five. What's your number four?
Number four was the first thing this one also was affected by the fact that it was going to cost like $100 to send a paperback from the States. So I ended up requesting a PDF from the publisher.
Yep.
Because again, someone who I've met on Instagram, on Twitter, and this is Duve Knox's novel, The Pussy Detective.
Yep. Great.
Which is, like we're talking about, this is in the dialect, like, Duve writes as he speaks. If anyone might have seen the launch we did on Halloween, he's a bad motherfucker.
Yeah, but
he's done it all. You know, he's gigged with Bill Hicks. Started a few rap magazines in the 90s.
Just yeah,
a crazy biography, and now he's turned his hand to like writing. Pulp fiction. Things in his vernacular that speak to his life. I mean, he's like, you know, I won't tell you his age, but he's been around.
Yeah.
And the synopsis for this one is an occult erotic mystery about Reverend Daddy Hoodoo helping his women find their lost or missing pussies with the help of an extraordinary Madam X, featuring heartless gangsters, voodoo sex magic, and a young woman in distress by the name of Abyssinia, who is in desperate need of the services of Daddy Hoodoo. This tale leads from between the sheets to the streets to the boardroom suites and beyond. And this is a 200-page novel that I read in a night.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. It's got good gender politics.
Yeah.
You may be surprised to hear.
Yeah.
It's framed as a blaxploitation sort of inspired occult mystery, I guess.
Yeah.
Beautiful summary of like Duve's work as he continues to like pump these really incredible books out.
Yeah,
just a funny dude. And yeah, again, the rhythm of the language just like transports you through this, like, you know, it is essentially a script format.
Right.
Which is done, it's almost, yeah, a lot of phonetically, yeah, written passages.
Yeah.
But yeah, the turns of phrase and the use of language are just incredible.
Yeah, great. People kind of forget that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
No, vulgar language, and I don't mean vulgar as in dismissive, but I'm kind of describing the way the words are put together and the way a sentence is constructed isn't like you have to read it. You have to read it and really get into where it's going, because if you just kind of react to every third word, you're missing what it's actually saying.
Absolutely, and once you're in, like it's a. Yeah, it's a top-notch piece of, like, pulp fiction. And, again, it's sort of, you know, the low-culture sort of ideas around, you know, you're giving people what they want but also a little bit of what they need. And you're sort of living on the fringes. You know, it's not literary in the sense of, like, you're going to get a tick and an invite to all the festivals.
Yeah.
But it's genuinely thrilling and, yeah, just genuine and, you know, it's just a really beautiful piece of work.
Yeah, that sounds great.
I want to see a film adaptation. I don't know how you do it, but...
yeah. As soon as you find out, let me know.
Yeah.
Number four for me is, once again, a mild cheat, but it's two graphic novels that came out last year. It's Reckless, The Ghost in You, and Reckless, Follow Me Down by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. These are a series of graphic novels that have been usually comics come out as single issues and then get collected as graphic novels. Brubaker and Phillips did Criminal, like they've done all these noir comics for years now, and then they just stopped doing the monthlies and then just started every 3 to 4 months releasing a brand new graphic novel.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And Reckless is it's about a guy called Ethan Reckless. He is one of those people that you call when you're in trouble, and he does things for you, and sometimes those things get him into some trouble. He's in on the seedier side of life. He's probably had not the best of backgrounds. A classic kind of paperback pulp hero type of character. It's set in the 80s of Los Angeles. So, you know, think of all the sex, drugs and murder and all that kind of stuff. When you read it looks sweaty.
Yeah.
And the characters are great. And a lot of the stories are told from... sort of at some point in Reckless's future, so you have a vague idea of where some of the characters might be going. Brubaker was a big fan of TV show, the Rockford Files. You know, he's kind of into that kind of stuff. It feels a little bit like the movie Point Break. The Long Goodbye, you know, that kind of thing. And they're great. I can't wait for them to come out. And it sounds like, I don't think it's been definitively stated, but it looks like there's going to be a TV series based on the Criminal comics. And people have heard me bang on about my disillusionment with comics in general, but this is proof that the artwork and the art form are still fantastic and viable. You just have to avoid the mainstream stuff.
Yeah, like releasing them as like actual chunks instead of month to month. Certainly sounds more appealing than having to go to a fucking comic shop every
Yeah, you get a full story, and Sean's artwork's beautiful, and his son does the colour as well.
Right.
And it's they're just great, and they look fantastic on the bookshelf. So the Reckless series in general, I would suggest to everyone to check them out. But last year, The Ghost in You and Follow Me Down are two fantastic reads. Okay, what's your number three?
So I've been trying to find like a unifying theory of like what these, I read these books in this order, but also they sort of map a little bit of like what last year was like.
Right.
So the last thing I read before the Queensland floods was Mark Lanigan's Devil in a Coma.
Yep.
The last thing I read on the news before we went out the night before the floods was that he died.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So this book sort of like is a little, it's a reflection on his getting COVID.
Yeah.
He'd moved to Ireland. He got it really badly.
Yeah.
And he was basically coming in and out of a coma. He was writing this book in this sort of hallucinatory sort of poetry, lyrics, all these other narrative approaches.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he has this basically spirit quest, I guess, where he reflects on the fact he's like survived all this other shit. You know, his book from his memoir from the previous year went into like, you know, basically how he dodged so many bullets that Lane Staley, Kurt Cobain and all the rest didn't.
Yeah.
And his guilt at the age of 58 over having made it.
Right.
To that point. And then, just that horrible moment of, you know, the book ends and it's genuinely uplifting, but it was also like, and then the day later we find out that he's passed away.
Wow.
From complications.
Yeah.
And then there's blood. It's not a downer though. It's like it's definitely a mood piece and it takes you on a journey. It's a shorter book as well.
Yeah.
Just in terms of like a testament to his talent. So, and like the range of music that he'd given us. I mean, the solo albums alone, like just the incredible back catalogue there.
Did he know that he was dying or did he suspect or?
From memory, I think it was complications. It was just he had long COVID and there was something tangential to that like got him.
Right.
I don't think it was like, that he knew.
Yeah.
He'd moved to Ireland to get better, I think, after the, you know, turbulence of the last few years.
Yeah.
So the book is a bit of a meditation on like the public health system in the UK and basically probably would have been dead during that bout with COVID.
Right.
If he'd not gone there. But I just think that one sort of sits in the middle of this list and it was sort of like where the year pivoted into like what the hell's going on now.
Yeah.
As a little piece of memoir and old poetry, I really endorse it, recommend it.
Yeah, great. All right.
Yeah.
My number three is another book that's looking backwards, but a little bit further. It's Chuck Klosterman's The 90s, A Book. And
it's on my extended list.
All right. Well, because I'm actually working on something that's set in the 90s, and I'd already was working on this piece, and then I thought I should give this a read. I was keen to read it, but I thought I should read this now because even though that's from an American point of view and mine's from an Australian, there's the flavor of it. You know, you just pick up on little things. Klosterman is just a really good writer, you know, and even if you disagree with him, he's compelling in his convictions about why he's drawing things together. And he's also
about Kiss.
Well, you know, it's
if you can't put it in a list of like, you know, anal retentively sort of like detailed insights.
No, it's great. He can somehow draw a line through, you know, hair metal to Alan Greenspan, and then relate it back to college football. And you sit there and you read it all and you go, yep,
that
all makes sense. Yep.
That's definitely just outside the top five. I really enjoyed it, and he sort of lost me with his novels. Like his fiction sort of lost me a little bit over the last decade. But, yeah, the pop cultural criticism stuff he does is just, unfathomably good.
Yeah, yeah. He really has a handle on what he's talking about, why he's talking about it. And if you live through the 90s, I think it's a really good look back at, everything from, Seinfeld and, Tarantino coming through. But also something that I'd completely forgotten about was the phenomenon that was Garth Brooks and when he just decided... Like, that was one of those...
I hated Garth Brooks for obvious reasons at high school. Because, it was like, that was the go-to.
Yeah.
The Chris Gaines stuff where he decided he was like a Trent Reznor style...
Mate, it's fascinating.
Got the little corset on.
Yeah, it's great. I thoroughly recommend it as a read. If you were there or you weren't there, you'll really enjoy it.
Getting that sense of what it was like not to be constantly like plugged into something.
Yes.
Because there's that great sort of discussion of like that transition in the early 90s after Murakami's book.
Yeah.
About the end of history, where it was like, and here's with Clinton and all the rest, here's where things started to shift into where we're at now.
Yeah.
Very bizarre way.
Yeah, no, it's great. All right, what's your number two?
Alan Moore, Illuminations.
Yeah.
Yep. Is he on there for you?
Well, I technically didn't... I only just started it at the end of last year, and so I technically didn't finish it until this year. So,
for the rules.
So it'll be in it will definitively be in the 2023 favorite books. And
I was just going just this afternoon when I had the moment, just going back and having remind myself about what stories it were, obviously, and just the breadth of what that motherfucker can do.
Yeah.
Just mind-blowing.
I enjoyed every short story in there. I think maybe my favorite was the story about, what is it? It's the galaxy that's forming at the start of the universe.
I've got a note for it somewhere. It's a Boltzmann brain.
Yes.
And then basically it's the entire history of like its species devolving into a complete cesspit of like, murder and
more. Yeah. It's really funny.
This highly evolved creature that just basically has all the foibles of humans.
Yeah.
It's got a sort of a concubine consciousness, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's really bad.
Yeah.
Real shithead.
It's really funny. And
vaping Jesus at the apocalypse, like just all such great fun.
The vaping Jesus catching up with the real estate agent is a great short. And
just the beautiful depiction of the apocalypse as it's happening, like, and they're sort of like protected on this estate and sort of observing the end of everything.
Yeah, and the indifference to it as well. That's part of what I enjoy. And anyone who's a Patreon subscriber will have heard Garth and I talk about the big novella in it, Whatever We Can Know About Thunderman, which is his absolute takedown of the comic book industry. So I don't know about you, but I've done a little, not much, but a little search to see what other comic book creators are saying about it. It seems, I don't know about you, but it seems sparse.
Right.
I feel like no one's commenting on it because they're probably all too smart to know that if they comment on it, they're giving him more sales.
Absolutely. No doubt. Yeah. I mean, I think, which would upset him too, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Not more sales as well, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. But it's the only thing that I found that was, if I can find it quickly, was from Grant Morrison, who was smart enough not to really comment on it. But anyway, he writes in his Substack, it's official. Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster, Bill Finger, Jack Kirby, Carl Burgos, etc. are the true instigators of insurrection in America, cunningly embedding fascist and racist ideals into the four-color DNA of their so-called heroes when they created Superman, Batman, the Human Torch, and all the rest, whose names shall live in infamy. Their characters helped out a Trump ye dream ticket on the throne of a weepy nation. I only pray this means we can at last rejoice in the theft of all those copyright billions this fash cohort was swindled out of. Serves that gang of dyed-in-the-wool ratsies right. And I read that and I went, he read that, and they are taking it personally and not agreeing as they normally don't.
Oh, certainly they are not.
But I have to be honest, it broke me.
The CIA, you know, that was the MK Ultra sort of thing. It was actually another book that almost made the list in a similar sort of vein to the Oppenheimer one, was a book about the CIA's basically like hallucinogenics program in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
And also basically how they turned a blind eye and brought the Nazis over.
Yeah.
To continue the human experiments on people.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that stuff, you know, directly ties into Thunder Man as well. You know, that's the, you know, the CIA coming in and like doing the psyop on the country. And
I'll be honest. The Alan Moore in the 80s was through the work of Swamp Thing before we even get to something like Watchmen, was my gateway to higher literature. In the works of comic books, you know, Miracle Man was also a huge influence on me as a young kid. The Eclipse reprints, and I think Alan Moore has slammed the door on it as well for me.
Yeah, well, you know,
he brought me in, he took me out. Anyway,
and I'm just going to keep posting that photo of him in the Hammer and Sickle t-shirt, and I'm going to get one made eventually.
So yeah,
I have my podcasting outfit from now on.
Yeah, great. You should definitely do that. My number two was Blood in the Garden by Chris Herring. I had Chris Herring as a guest on the podcast. This is a book about the New York Knicks in the 90s. So I had double 90s flavor there for a while. And for whether you were a fan of the NBA or not, it's a cracking read about a team that is one of the biggest teams in the NBA. They have only won two championships, which were back in 71 and 73. They have been pretty mediocre for decades. And this was one era where they got really close. They were so close to finally becoming champions again. And it's a cast of characters. Once again, if you're not into NBA, it doesn't really matter. All of the people involved in it are fascinating, and the way Chris Herring writes about it, there's a lot of affection, but he's also not afraid to shine a light on some of these people in ways that makes you go, well, they were a crazy arsehole, weren't they? So even though it's about the NBA and people might not be that interested in basketball per se, the book is a fantastic read and came in hard at my number two.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, any story along those lines, once you're invested in the characters, like, doesn't matter, you know, what the framework is that's hung on.
Yeah, it could be tiddlywinks, you know. If you got compelling characters, I'll find myself becoming a fan of tiddlywinks, so...
Think about the King of Kong with the Donkey Kong.
The Doco.
Yeah.
One of the great docos.
Yeah. What an asshole, Billy Mitchell, 20 years later. Totally a Trump guy.
Mate, just the best. The King of Kong, anyone hasn't seen that, don't read anything about it. Just find it, watch it. And on behalf of Garth and I, you're welcome.
I mean, the early 2000s just had like those little slice of life character documentaries where it was like just hit after hit on that front. Yeah. American movie.
So good. All right. So what's your number one?
This isn't the last thing I read last year, but it's pretty close to it. The last thing I read last year was Nothing But a Good Time, which was the story of the Sunset Strip and the Haiti-type rock explosion.
Yep.
But prior to that, just before Christmas, I'd been listening to a podcast about working class literature. And this guy, Scottish guy, D.D. Johnston, was being interviewed. He started his career, his first novel was published around the sort of Occupy movement. And he's a socialist. He's got good left-wing politics. So I was like, got to check it out.
Yeah.
And this one is called, it's called Disneyland. And it's set basically in a rundown Scottish village after all the lights go out. Like there's, we don't know what's happened.
Yeah.
We just know there's an emergency broadcast where the government's essentially saying, stay in place, fill your bathtub up.
Yeah.
We'll come and rescue you later. They don't. And then it's the story is essentially like, are we going to give in to our worst, lesser impulses, or is this community going to figure it out?
Yeah.
And basically redeem themselves because no one else is going to help because, you know, the UK government's underneath London in the arc.
Yeah.
Waiting it out and everyone's basically, yeah. So don't always just read depressing shit. This is actually really uplifting and upbeat. It's got really good politics and it really sort of gives you a little bit of hope for like all the stuff we're going through now.
Yeah.
And potentially going through. But yeah, community, like we discovered with the floods, I guess that's the button on this, you know, really discovered that like people do pull together and give a shit. And that's essentially the theme of this book.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Great.
And it's a good, it's a quick, relatively quick read, but just a really nice little sort of button on the year. Quite a bit of uplifting year.
Feels like the way you needed to finish off 2022,
well,
right?
Considering how it started, yeah.
Yeah. Well, coming in at number one for me is an author that you already mentioned. It's Ryan Hughes, and it was The Black Locomotive, which was the follow-up to XX, which came out pretty quickly, didn't it?
I mean, I ordered my copy, and it took me nearly 12 months to get it.
Oh, really? Right.
And then it got lost in the move. So.
Oh, no. God damn it. That's why I never want to move. You never know which bit of gold you're going to lose. The Black Locomotive is set in a world underneath the London that is well known to us. Through the vision of architecture, design, and technology, this story merges the past and present in a unique story that begins with the discovery of a strange anomaly. It is found underneath a secret Crossrail extension being built underneath Buckingham Palace. The more it's investigated, the more it becomes clear that before London came to be, there was something else here. And what does that mean for the future? You know, he's just a really good writer. Aesthetically, it looks beautiful, you know. And also, once again, kind of better to go in not knowing much about this. But I devoured it and, you know, I would like to get him back on. He was so generous the first time he was on the podcast.
That was a huge conversation.
Yeah, he was so great. So yeah. I'm keen to get him back for that, but I'm also keen to find out what he's going to do next. He's made me a big fan of his stuff, and also they look beautiful on the shelves because of his design quality.
I ended up getting the ebook of that when I came to do the second episode of Past the Amal in Sydney with you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, actually started it that night. Not recommending the ebook because a little bit gets lost in translation with some of the graphic here. But I tore through that XX in no time.
It's definitely one that you want to be holding the weight of it in your hands. So I put the word out to our listeners before the end of last year to send through their favorite books. So I've got some ones to share with you. So. So Terry writes, I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but I can't seem to have more than a 2-minute conversation with anyone in the past few months without mentioning Aha Barber's book, consumed on colonialism, climate change, consumerism, and the need for collective change. While I'd love to be voting for something lighter, and I've read 61 books this year, according to my book app, so there was a lot of competition. Good work, Terry. Fuck, I felt like I'd done well, and she's left me in the dust.
Yeah, good read. It says about 22, 23, I think. So.
Oh, my Lord. So impressive. Terry says, I just found this book way too important not to mention here. I've never read any other book that demanded so much examination of my own behaviour. Judging that my book club is still talking about it months later suggests that it's not just me either. So that's a scorching way to start off. Yeah. Rachel Blair, one of the great listeners of the podcast, she has written, My Heart is a Little Wild Thing by Nigel Featherstone. Her favourite 22 fiction. It's a vivid, gentle, comforting and solid reminder that as we reach the ages where we are supposed to have it all worked out, it's okay if we don't. Or if it all changes as we change, it's that's fine as well. It's a beautiful piece of work.
Thanks for the reviews on Goodreads too, Rachel.
Oh, yes.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
she's a good
that.
Egg.
Yeah.
Pip wrote, spending my daylight hours reading tales to under 12s, I try to read grown-up books after the school bell. I also have Miss 15 and Miss 13, both voracious readers, so try to have at least one book we can all read as our own little book club. 2022 saw us thoroughly enjoy It Sounded Better in My Head by Nina Kenwood. Equal parts funny and moving, all three of us enjoyed the humour used, the reference to Australia, and the wonderful relatable characters, Four Spuds, which is a little reference to Couch Potato. So that sounds like a fun read. VJ Owens writes, a bit of a cheat as I was reading this for a fair whack of last year and finished it in Feb or March. That's all right. The rules here are pretty loose. VJ says, XX, a novel graphic by Ryan Hughes, was the best book I've read in years. Almost a year later, I think I'm ready to attempt the Black Locomotive, or hopefully this podcast has given you get on with it, mate.
Come on.
Aaron Donaldson has written, I'm currently reading the biography of John Rymel, Polar Pioneer, the biography of one of Australia's leading explorers in the 1930s from Panola in South Australia. Gripping reading, an amazing account of determination, leadership, and man management while studying the unknown expanse of Antarctica. Written by his son Peter, it gives a well-detailed and studied account of John's exploits. Gareth from the Dollop wouldn't like the amount of seals mentioned and what they used them for, though.
Podcast crossover. Yep.
Aaron's bringing his own jokes. That's great.
Yeah, come on, man.
I'll have to tell Gareth.
You don't remember what the seals were used for,
He's a nice boy. I won't bring it up with him. Claire writes, I couldn't not have a copy of Chivalry by Neil Gaiman, illustrated by Colleen Doran. Chivalry has a soft spot with me as it was the first short story in the Smoke and Mirrors, which was my first Neil Gaiman collection of stories. I love this illustrated version with as much affection. That's a great thing about books. Like, they're just there. And you're always excited when, like, if someone hasn't read something, you just think, oh, well.
There you go.
You'll get to it in your own time. And when you do, it'll be great. And finally, Matthew Thurbin. This is not a surprise, knowing Matt. Faith, Hope and Carnage by Nick Cave and Sean O'Hagan. Deeply moving series of conversations about Nick's faith, the creative process in healing after the death of his son, Arthur. It feels like a companion piece to Nina Simone's Gum by Warren Ellis, which I also read this year, released late 2021. Both books reinforce the healing power of music. I know there's no category for favourite gig of 2022, but Nick Cave and Warren Ellis at the Sydney Opera House was a revelation. So some great suggestions there. Good. How good are my listeners?
Hear about people who can read.
Yeah, but they're fantastic. But they're also across movies, across TV shows, across music. Like they've been really articulate about expressing why they've enjoyed something. So
through the Patreon mainly.
Yeah. So I'm pretty thrilled.
Well done, guys.
To have them as listeners and also have them contributing their ideas. So I think this will become a regular thing to start off every year. So, Garth, thank you for joining and sharing your books as well. Can you let everyone know, just a little reminder, where they can find you on social media?
At Pass the Amel on Twitter and Instagram, and passtheamel.com on the website.
Yes.
Is where you can grab books as well.
Yeah, and I have enjoyed both volumes so far, and I reckon now that the volume two is out, if you've missed out on volume one, it's a really good time to get into it, because you can roll straight into volume two and keep the flow going.
We can package them up if you want to grab both at once, it's all within our means to get it out there.
Yeah, it's great, and you'll be back pretty soon, actually, with our first Pass the Amel episode for...
Are we going to tease it, or...?
Go. Give them a tease. Tell them what it is.
Sons of Steel, 1988. Absolutely bonkers metal science fiction epic. Starring Rob Hartley, who is Angry Anderson with bigger pecs and leather pants. And you've never heard of it? I don't think many people have heard of it. But it's getting a bit of a cult following, building rapidly, and once you've seen it, you'll know why.
Yeah, it's also an anti-nuclear discussion as well, wrapped up with barbarians from the future.
Who look like, mid-period Dennis Lilly. nice and fresh.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and we've already watched it. We've already recorded the podcast. It's a really fun one, so that'll be up soon. So we will leave it there for now. So thank you, mate. That was fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to Garth for joining me for this discussion. He will be back in the next couple of weeks with his regular segment, Pass the Amel. And we are going to get right back into the Ausploitation genre. And we are talking about the film Sons of Steel. You know, maybe you want to check it out. Maybe you want to listen to the podcast first. The film is hilarious. And it's a really funny chat with Garth. I am so grateful that we are doing this segment on the podcast, because I am coming into contact with just some wonderfully eclectic Australian movies. They're so bizarre and weird, and they're ours. So, you know, it's good fun. Otherwise, I just, you know, wouldn't even think to go and check these out. So I love the Pass the Amel segment, and I'm looking forward to discussing Sons of Steel with you. If you'd like to support our work at Big Squid, you can either join the Patreon at patreon.com/Justin Hamilton, and you can find a tier that suits you. There's bonus podcasts, scripts, access to bigger discounts to live events, all sorts of extras, and all the money that goes into the Patreon goes back straight into this podcast to help produce it. Now, I know money is tight for a lot of people, but sometimes you think, I'd still like to lend some support. You can do that for free. You can leave a top review at Apple Podcasts. Just say heaps of nice things about us so other people will give us a go. Or spread the word about the work we're producing here. You'll know the right people to talk to. You know the people that get it. So carefully introduce them to what we're doing here. Maybe not with the next Pass the Amel episode. Maybe with one of the more audience-friendly episodes. But it's a schizophrenic podcast, but what can I say? I'm all over the shop and I like heaps of things, so the podcast reflects that. I'll be back next week with a new Chitter Chatter episode on Monday morning, and then comedian Bron Lewis returns to the podcast just in time for her run at the Adelaide Fringe. Let's finish today's podcast with a quote from an author, one of the great authors, and that author is not just an author, but a philosopher, Dr. Seuss. The more that you read, the more things you will know. The more that you learn, the more places you'll go. I don't know if he was a real doctor. Was he a real doctor? He's the only doctor that I'll ever completely trust. I know there's some of you out there going, what about Dr. Who? I was like, yeah, Dr. Seuss. That's my guy. Anyway, until then. Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.